Good morning, good morning, good morning. Happy Wednesday. Thank you for joining me on the 200th episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am so excited. It's been almost a year to get here, but it has been a fabulous year. I have met amazing people, made new friends, connected, had new opportunities, and all thanks to the Roundtable Talk Show. So I know today the 200th episode is going to be the same. We're going to meet amazing people. We're going to learn. We're going to laugh. We're going to take notes. But you know what we're going to do? We're going to share this show with our friends, especially the 200th episode. You have to share it because I ask you on every show, Monday through Friday, no matter what episode it is, to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. There's someone in your circle, in your network, in your house who needs to hear this message. And they won't hear this message unless you introduce it to them. So like always, I always say it time after time, friends, do not let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're going ahead and introducing the show to your friends, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest. And our first guest is Miss Deborah Desser. Deborah studied languages, literature, and linguistics in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. For over 30 years, she used her writing skills as she ran custom furniture and interior design company. She is a publisher and author of children's book of poetry and haiku, and she is preparing to publish two more books. She is a proud mom of a son in medical school and passionate about the seed level of education. Good morning, Deborah. How are you?
I am so fine, Sharifa. Good morning, and thank you for having me here.
You are so welcome. I never had a guest that says, I'm so fine. Why are you so fine this morning, Deborah?
I make it a practice every day. I get up and I have a choice to be happy or unhappy. I choose happy, and my cup is always more than overflowing. It's just the way it is. It's my mantra.
Yeah. Tell us about yourself. Who are you? What do you do? What are you passionate about?
Well, I'm passionate about a lot of things. I'm passionate. Every year I do it. Rather than a New Year's resolution, I choose something within my personality, my qualities to work on. And for the past year, I have been working on kindness, and especially during this pandemic and economical phase, the likes of which we have never seen in our lifetime. So I think kindness is very, very important. And so that's one of the things I'm passionate about, just going out there and being an advocate for kindness. The other things I'm passionate about, aside from my son, I mean, I could talk about him for hours because he's my one and only, is my writing. And I continue to do interior design work, but to a lesser extent. But now I am just thrilled, over the moon, happy about my first published book, which I don't know if you can see it, but yes. Mumbo Jumbo, Poetry and Haiku. A lot of the poems in here are based on things that happened with my son growing up. So for me, that's a thrill. And then my other passion is writing for other people. I do social media, and I write blogs, news releases, all kinds of things. So I'm passionate about a lot of things and just happy to be up and awake every day.
That's wonderful. I love people who are passionate about so many different things. It makes the conversation that much easier. You gave me a million different questions, but I'm going to go back to the first question that I thought of. Is you said over the last year, I have been focused on kindness. And it reminds me of something I used to say, you know, with one of my husbands, my ex-husband. You know, I had too many of them, but that's another story. And I would say, you know, I'm trying to be nice. And he'd be like, why do you have to try to be nice? And I'm like, because that's not like my default, you know, thing. So when you say I've been focusing on kindness, I've been working on kindness, it kind of implies that prior to the last year, you weren't too kind, or maybe I'm reading that wrong.
And that's a really good question. And I might have the same takeaway if someone would say that to me. No, I've always been a kind person, sometimes to a fault. But I have been much more conscious about being kind to people who obviously, people who walk around with those faces that are just not smiling. Just trying to be, to a beacon, you know, and to show people that, yeah, there's light out there, there's happiness out there. When somebody's, you know, I'm not I'm not honking the horn if somebody's not moving in traffic. I might have done that before. Typically a very kind person, but I'm really being much more stringent with my thought process and realizing that kindness goes such a long way and it really can help so many people and you don't even realize that it has.
So when you say the last year, was this a direct result of the global pandemic where you said, you know what, people just need so much more kindness in the world?
Yes, yes. In my community, I reach out to people who might be not able to get out to see if I can do something to help them. I go a little bit more above and beyond, and I'm not completely, you know, focused on my own world, but looking at what other people's worlds look like during this past year and how can I help them.
That's powerful. I like that. Deborah, I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And our next guest is Ms. Ardenae Garner. Ardenae is a licensed master social worker and certified professional coach, owner of Ardenae Enterprise LLC, and founder of the Campaign 42 National Scholarship Foundation. She provides coaching, speaking, and consulting services for aspiring entrepreneurs and small business owners. She has hosted numerous events, including her signature Love Campaigns, award ceremonies, and various seminars and workshops. Ardenae is on a personal mission to help 79,000 women identify their passion, develop their health, their faith, and pursue entrepreneurship on their own terms. Good morning, Ardenae. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining me. I was reading your bio and I just got distracted. I told you it's the 200th episode. I'm all excited and I'm reading and I'm like 79,000. And then the thought popped into my head while I was reading. I'm like, how did you just pop out with 70? Why 79,000?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. So I am very passionate about helping women identify their passion, develop their faith, and pursue entrepreneurship. And in my this particular year, I just retired from working for someone else and I'm doing my business full time. And so my goal was in my first year of business to be able to help 79 women. And 79 came about because that's the age my mom was when she passed away last year. Thank you. And so when I think about one of the principles that Steve Harvey talked about, where he said, just multiply your effort by 10, I said, okay, so my first year, I want to support 79 women. My second year, 790 women. And by my fifth year, I want to be able to reach 79,000 women. So that number just makes me remember my mom and that she's not here to be able to see me and what I'm doing, but the 79 will always remind me of her.
That is so beautiful. I'm glad I asked that question because, you know, sometimes things come to people randomly. I'm glad there was such a powerful meaning behind it. Let's talk about the seven spiritual lessons of relationships and divine invitations.
All right. So the seven spiritual lessons of relationships is my third baby that I gave birth to. It came about out of relationships that I've had with men and my employers. And the seven spiritual principles are forgiveness, passion, unconditional love, honesty, trust, faith, and courage. And each one of those principles, I've learned valuable lessons that help shape who I am. And they're like guiding principles of what I do. And so my mission really is to be able to share the lessons I've learned in relationships with men, in relationships with God, and in my personal relationship with myself, with others, so that they have the courage and they feel empowered to do whatever God is calling them to do. And for me, it's very spiritual. So I don't view anything as mistakes or any mishaps. I look at them as either lessons or blessings from God.
I love that. Lessons or blessings. Now, sometimes people, I feel, can tend to oversimplify things by saying, oh, what the world needs is love. All we need is love. Just love, 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 love. But for a lot of people, it's like, okay, but what does that look like? And for you, part of that is love campaigns. Let's talk about those for a moment.
So, again, as I reflect back, everything I do is really purposeful. And so the love campaign was started. A close friend of mine's son was murdered here in Syracuse, New York. And thank you. And I prayed about, Lord, how can I help this family? How can I help my friend? How can I help our community? And he put it on my heart to do what was called a love campaign. And it started out where I would type up inspirational quotes and messages and put them on like a business card or an index card. And I would affix a $1 bill to that card. And I would pass those out randomly at different events, at different functions. And people would initially be attracted to the dollar bill, but it was the message that was attached to the dollar bill that I wanted them to receive. And from that, one day we gave out one of those love deposits, as I call it. And this gentleman was so inspired. He said, well, I want to give you $250 and I want you to coordinate a barbecue at a local park and just invite everybody to come. Could you get some people to grill and could you coordinate that? I'm like, absolutely. And that's how the love campaign was born, from a generous donation from someone who received one of my love deposits.
I love it. Interesting story, powerful story, Ardenae. I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Jessica Ryder. Jessica is what you call an integrator when it comes to business, a rare breed with the capabilities to take an entrepreneur's vision and bring it to life by seeing every hole within the plan and implementing systems to plug them. As a visionary herself, she understands the passion for great things in the world, but can also see how to accomplish them. Jessica has led teams and companies to great success by utilizing the skills instilled in her from a young age. She is never shy of hard work, commits to being kind to people, and always finds the solution to any challenge. Good morning, Jessica. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm excited. 200 episodes.
That's awesome. That's just great.
Thank you. So you're another kind person. You focus it on being kind.
You know what? Just to go off of what Deborah said, you know, I love what she said, and I love that she's making a conscious effort to do it. We can all be kind, but there's a difference when you make a conscious effort to be kind. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a $250 barbecue. While that's awesome and I love that, it can just be simply holding the door for somebody or smiling at them as they're walking by. Just a quick story. I had a gentleman, I was at a coffee shop and I smiled as he walked by and just said, good morning. And 30 minutes later, I know everything about his, you know, time in World War II. His daughter is a major in the military. You know, he just went on and on and on. And you have no idea, just saying good morning. Maybe he just needed to share that this morning, you know? And it's, I love Deborah's conscious effort for kindness.
I think we all have to have more of a conscious effort to be kind. I had a guest on one of my shows where she said she received this letter, or she saw this letter where this woman put it out all over her neighborhood. And it said, if you need anything, if you're a senior citizen and you can't go to the store, if you don't want to leave the house, I'll go for you, you know, introduced herself, left the number. And so my guest said, I want to try the same thing. So she wrote up the letter, she walked around, passed it out in her neighborhood. And she said she did not get one person who said, I need help. But she says she had several people who called and said, you know what? I didn't even know you lived there. I didn't even know who you are. Nice to meet you, you know? And it was a way for people to connect more than it was a way for people to ask for help. So I think it's a beautiful time.
Right. I think that's awesome.
Tell us about yourself, Jessica. What are you passionate about?
So I have many passions like Deborah. I don't have any children, so I don't have a son that I'm passionate about. But I have a passion for growing businesses, mm-hmm. but it's deeper than that. It's purposeful businesses. It's businesses that the owner can see that they have a bigger presence in the world, a bigger purpose to what they're doing. We're not just selling widgets to make money. We're doing something good for the world, but a lot of times they get stuck and they, you know, maybe they grow to 3 or 4 million and then they're stuck. They don't know how to keep moving. And so they look to me, and most of the time it's just over coffee and we're just chatting. And I'm like, how do we keep going? And it's just through questions. Well, who are your people? Most of the time I focus on people because a lot of times companies don't have the right people in the right seats. Mm-hmm. And so they're not moving and everybody's not kind of moving in the right way. So that's a big passion of mine, obviously, is growing businesses. But I also have a passion for nature. And I recently just published a book called How Camping Saved My Life. And I'll share it there. But it truly is a passion. And I know camping is the huge thing this year. Everybody's doing it. And I like to say I did it before everybody thought it was cool. And it gets me into nature. As a young professional in my 20s, I had a breakdown. You know, I was go, go, go all the time. And I broke down. And I had to decide how I was going to rebuild my life and what that meant. And for me, nature is where I found that home. So I've kind of redeveloped my lifestyle so that I can get into my camper as much as possible. I don't live in it full time. It literally sits on the side of my house Monday through Friday, but on the weekends I can get out and I can get into nature, and it's the tool I use to get there. So I know there are busy professional women like you three that are on here as well, that I just need to escape and relax. But the thought of getting in a camper, like, scares me. How can I make that easier for you? Because what I tell people is, you grab your groceries and you walk into your condo in Florida. I grab my groceries and I walk into my condo that sits on the side of my house. I just happen to pull it to any lake within 3 hours of my house.
I think that's powerful, Jessica, and you would not have to convince me. I was born in Washington, D.C., left D.C. when I was 2, moved to Columbus, Ohio, lived there until I was 8. When I was 8 years old, my family, my mother, my father, my sister, my brother, my aunts, my grandmother, we all piled into this big camper and we drove from Columbus, Ohio to Los Angeles, California.
Oh.
And months. But we stopped at so many cool places along the way. One of my favorite places was we went to see the Indian reservations in Arizona, and it was one of the most amazing experiences I ever had. So now I'm semi-retired. I'm not like Ardenae yet. One day I'll get there. But when I completely retire, my dream is just to go buy an RV and have no particular place to go. So I feel you, Jessica.
Yeah, you just got to get in and go. I mean, that's our, when my husband retires, our plan is to, we're in St. Louis, so to head directly south and then follow the border all the way around. No matter how long it takes us, no plans, just go.
Yes, yes. My daughter lives in St. Louis. I'm go check on her and make sure she's all right.
Okay, I will. Tell me.
I'm gonna come back to you, Jessica, but I wanna go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Barry Saywoods. Mr. Saywoods has 25 years of experience in the real estate industry. He began his career in the late 1980s with Grubb and Ellis, and then with Howard Eckert & Co. in Orange County. In 1992, Mr. Saywoods became a partner in the West Coast operations of Howard Eckert & Co., and in 1994, he purchased the outstanding stock of the company and changed the corporate name to the Saywoods Company. Mr. Saywoods now oversees all of the management and ownership responsibilities for the company, in addition to becoming involved with the negotiations of selected transactions throughout North America. Good morning, Barry. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining the ladies.
Yeah, I feel honored. I've got a whole group of ladies to chat with in the morning.
Yes, because the guys won't join me on the show. I have to like beg and plead, and the women are like, I'll talk. Men don't want to talk, Barry.
Oh, I'll talk. And it's a good way to start out the day, right?
Yes. So before we go too much into your story, amazing. I love it. What are your thoughts so far about what Jessica or Ardenae and Deborah had to say?
Well, my perspective is more from a corporate side of things, but certainly the theme so far of what I've heard is really focusing on keywords in terms of trying to have a positive attitude and keep yourself in a positive place, especially during these difficult and trying times. And so for us here, just to, I guess, expand on that theme, sort of the two words that we use in our work environment here is really patience and conviction. We deal with corporations, and then we deal with individuals and families that are tenants of ours within our portfolio, both on the commercial side of things and on the residential side of things. And so, especially in California, not that there aren't issues all over, but I feel like California is one of the worst places to be in terms of trying to have a daily routine and get back to normalcy at this point. It's very challenging. It's very challenging as a business owner. It's very challenging as an employee. It's very challenging as an individual or a parent or a family member or a student, certainly. And so part of the issue is trying to have patience in working through whatever your issues are relating to the pandemic, the economy, your personal issues, health issues, et cetera. And then the second is having conviction to be able to see whatever the game plan is through, because there's no quick end in sight, as we all are experiencing. And so you just don't wake up and the lights come back on and everything goes back to normal. So those are the two things we try and deal with and try and apply that to our business side of things.
Yes, there have been so many industries that have been affected, just about every industry, if not every industry, but I know real estate has been affected as well. I've had several guests on the show in the real estate industry who said right now it's the absolute wonderful best time to buy. Then I have other guests who say, do not buy anything at this time. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know where it's going. So I think there's a lot of conflicted information and a lot of confusion as in terms of real estate. What are your thoughts, Barry?
Yeah, well, I think you have to break it down because it depends on what piece of the market you're talking about. And so just to back up for a second, we really have two aspects to our business. We have a commercial aspect, which is the commercial brokerage company, where we represent tenants and corporations in helping them with their real estate throughout the country, predominantly here in Southern California, but we are negotiating transactions all over the country at any given time. And for those businesses, the issue is some businesses are doing very well as a result of the current environment and the economy and the need for whatever it is that they provide. Others are seriously struggling, whether it's to just get their people back to work or getting product out or being shut down because somebody at the office got sick and now I got to send everybody home and try and figure out how to do my business remotely. So those are all challenges. As from the landlord's perspective, it's very difficult because if your tenant is struggling financially, then they struggle to pay the rent. And so you have a disconnect because the tenant thinks they should be getting some help from the landlord and should be getting a deal, if you will, because everybody's hurting. The flip side of it is the landlord's hurting as well. And so nobody's giving the landlord a deal and everybody looks to the landlord. So they're really two hats. So when we wear the hat, we're assisting our client who is the tenant, certainly whether it's going back to get a short-term relief from the landlord, whether it's deferred rent and a restructuring, whether it's an extension of their lease and then incorporating some rent relief, there are creative things that you can do. Part of the issue is the landlord needs to believe that you're a viable entity going forward. So there is a fine line between, hey, I'm struggling and I'm going to make it, and hey, you need to give me a deal, otherwise I'm gonna go out of business, then why do I help you? Maybe you should just go out of business and I'll have to find someone else at the end of the day. So it really becomes a balancing act, and certain industries are continue to be affected, whether that's restaurants getting shut down and reopened and shut down and reopened, or whether it's a dry cleaner who says, hey, people don't go to parties, people don't have weddings, they don't go get fancy clothes and put them on, so they don't come to my store. And so everybody's got their own struggle, and it's really an issue of us trying to assist our clients from that perspective, and then do a balancing act with the landlord so that it's somewhat of a win-win or just a work together because we're all in the same boat. The flip side of our business, or the other half of our business, is we own a portfolio of commercial properties, including a bunch of apartment buildings throughout Southern California. And so that presents its whole other host of issues, which is people who are not at work, who are on unemployment, who are struggling, who have to stay at home because they're quarantined. Those people are struggling to pay the rent. And then now what do you do with those people? And there are a number of different buckets of help or assistance or work with you in that capacity. And so it's really a question of working with people on an individual basis, again, trying to determine what help do you need, how does that work, and how do we do that? And so without the government assistance in the past, $600 doesn't pay anybody's rent in California. people need to get back to work and get open. So we're hoping that some of these new changes and time and vaccine will help get people back to a better place and moving forward.
I definitely agree. I wanted you to touch on that, Jessica, what Barry had to say, because I know you work with entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs are trying to figure out some of the things that, that Barry mentioned.
I think he brought up an amazing point because nobody looks at both sides. Mm-hmm. So yes, you have the tenant that is struggling. And I think he brought up a good point that if the business isn't viable, let's just call a spade a spade. You know, I'm very much a direct approach. This is, I call it like I see it. And then we can have a discussion about if I'm right or wrong or whatever. But if it's not going anywhere, let's just call it a spade a spade. And then on the flip side of that, yeah, nobody thinks about the landlord. Nobody thinks, hey, nobody's helping him. Just like I imagine in his residential side of it. Yes, we want to help our tenants because we want them to stay. But if they're already 6 months behind and there's no viable future, you know, there's two sides to that. So when I'm working with businesses, I'm like, hey guys, like, sure. Do we work with this person that owes us, you know, $35,000 and we work to get our money? Yes. But at the end of the day, if they're just giving excuse, we got to take the next step because we're still a business here. We still need to make money. We still have to feed our kids.
Yeah. Yeah. And to add to that, I mean, the reality of it is very difficult for a business owner or an entrepreneur to walk away from their dream or from all the hard work or the financial capital that they've invested in their business. And which is why somebody from the outside looking in would be able to say, hey, look, you can make this work. You're going to have to cut back. You're going to have to let people go. You're going to have to tighten your belt. Or you know what? This is just not viable.
Right.
You know, on the apartment side, we have those exact same conversations every day with folks, which is, listen, tell me about your financial situation. I don't see how you're going to get current. I don't even see how you're going to pay rent next month. And even if you take stimulus money, or even if you go to family members for 1 month's rent, you owe me X number of months of rent. The better thing to do would be to go move in with the family member, try and save up your money. Let me make you a deal. You move out. Let me just rent it to someone else who is working, who has a job, who can pay it. And then my lender will leave me alone and not bother me that I don't have people that are not paying. I'm doing something right for you at the end of the day, and you can get back on your feet and not damage your credit and not get further in the hole. The difficulty is, I don't want to move. I like it here, and I'm going to be in a worse position short term. And people have to come to that determination, A, on their own, or B, with some coaxing. And that's the difficult thing to get people to realize, for sure.
It's the same with businesses as well.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I'm working with one now that, you know, he's ready to expand and do all, and I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Let's get home base good.
Yeah.
Home base has to be operating at 110% and performing beautifully. And then we can go and duplicate that in other areas.
Yeah. And on the commercial side with the businesses, you go to the landlord and you want a deal or you want some relief or whatever it is. Landlord says, I need updated financials. You can't just say, hey, I'm hurting. Hey, I was affected by COVID. That doesn't work. And then when you show the landlord and the financials really aren't that bad, the guy says, why do you need a deal? And if the financials are horrible, it's the same thing. I don't think a deal is going to help you. And so you need to be realistic. And you know, just because it's coronavirus doesn't mean that the rules of society are completely out the window. It doesn't mean that you don't have to pay your rent. It doesn't mean that if you signed a contract that you just rip up the contract, it doesn't count. And it doesn't mean that there still has to be a win-win at the end of the day if you have two parties trying to negotiate something, a transaction, whatever that winds up being. And so unfortunately, coronavirus didn't pick a side, right? It's affecting everybody. And so you have to work together and you have to understand that, I think, going in. That's part of the difficulty.
Yes. Too many people are looking at it as a get out of jail free card and just yes. None of these rules apply.
Yeah. And I would couch that with, look, there are a lot of people, almost everyone, hurting in some capacity. So you have to preface the conversation with, I understand you're hurting. I am sympathetic to your situation. However, that does not give you a free pass to do X, Y, and Z.
Absolutely. Ardenae, what are your thoughts?
I was just thinking, you know, my experience has been, even though the pandemic has certainly, you know, uprooted our lives, many of my peers have actually started businesses. I mean, in our community, there's a six-year-old girl who has started a Berry Munch, I'm getting the name incorrect, but started a business. She got her DBA. She's selling lemonade and homemade products. There's other people I know. I'm a part of some other groups who are actually launching their business during the pandemic. And so for me, I think this opportunity, I like what you said, Berry, is about patience. And while you say conviction, I say patience and faith. And it's really for those entrepreneurs who have a dream, is really stepping out on faith and following your dreams no matter what, even though you can only see, you may not even be able to see the first step, but you're still being persistent. And it's what I call in my book, that walk on water faith. And so while these are trying times, I'm really seeing some really resilient people come out of the woodworks and do things because they're forced to pivot and do things that they never thought they could do before. They're being creative and being entrepreneurial because they do have to create a supplemental form of money and income. And so I'm just fortunate that, you know, people are exercising their creativity to the 10th degree because they have no choice but to, if they really want to survive these tumultuous times.
Yes, absolutely.
I think she said something really key there. And for anybody listening, you need to like pause and go back to exactly what she said, because she said, take the step. You may not be able to see what it is, but you have to take the step. And I know as an entrepreneur myself, like, I know where I want to go. I know what the end result is. I know what small step I have to take today. I don't know what the next four steps are, but I have to take a step today. Mm-hmm. And I think that was beautifully said, because you have this goal. Okay, I'm going to make whatever your goal is. Maybe it's a monetary goal. Maybe it's a, you know, for me, it's 530 acres and a restaurant and everything else. Like, I see that. I don't know how I'm going to get there yet, but today I'm just going to take a step.
Yes.
I think you're going to see a lot of new businesses started up out of the pandemic, of people that realized that they could do business from their house, or they could do business without the normal setup of a fancy office or needing that type of overhead. I think you just have to get past the hurdle of where we're at today to get those people an opportunity to be able to get going.
Yes, because I see my RV, but I also wanted to go back to what Ardenae said is, you know, and what Berry said, we all have our own definitions of patience and something, because I grew up with patience and perseverance. That's what my parents always told me. You have to have patience and perseverance if you want to be successful, if you want to succeed. What was it like at your house, Deborah?
Wow. I came from I'm very blessed. I came from a household where I received many of my life's lessons. My father was quite a successful businessman. He owned a chain of jewelry stores. And my lessons from him were unbelievable, as well as from my mom. Yes, like you need to keep persevering your family, you know, your home life. You need to persevere. Nothing is going to be handed to you. You need to work for everything. I was never afraid to work. In fact, I was working at my father's jewelry stores on Saturdays when I was from 10 years old. And I remember my friends saying how they had been at the corner restaurant having Cokes and French fries. And I was working in my dad's store and making $10 for that 8-hour day. And for me, it was one of the best lessons I could have received. And I'll tell you a quick little story. When I was 13, I decided I wanted to take up guitar. And my father, he had money. There wasn't an issue with money at the time. He did very nicely for himself and for us. So I said, you know, Dad, would you give me the money or loan me the money to buy a guitar? He says, I have a better idea. He says, I'd like to introduce you to my bank manager. So we had a meeting, a business meeting, and I went into the bank manager with my dad, and the manager said, how much do you need for your guitar? And I said, well, I think at the time it was either 60 or 80, and I think it was like $80. And he said, well, I can't loan you $80. I can loan you $100. Like, it was like small amounts. And here's how you have to pay it back. And I signed a paper and we shook hands. And this was at 13 years old. So, and I paid back the loan. So these are the kinds of life lessons I received. And I am so grateful for them. I don't think anything should be handed to you, but I wanted to also just say one thing about what Barry was saying, win-win. I wrote a spiritual blog for about 7 years called The Willing Spirit. And win-win to me has always been extremely important. And when Barry was talking about, you know, there's the landlord and there's the tenant and so on and so forth, everything is about perspective. And I think when two sides are willing to look at the other person's perspective, and I learned this being a hockey mom, because the two teams, the parents were going crazy because that ref made the bad call. And all you had to do was get up and move to the other side of the bleachers and you would have seen what they were seeing. So the landlord, the tenant, the storekeeper, the customer, whatever it is, to have a win-win, you really need to understand that there is another perspective.
Yeah, and easier said than done when two people are in a conversation, both trying to fight for, you know, what they believe is right or money or what, or their point of view or anything else.
Right.
But the other thing too, that I wanted to bring up is, you were talking about kindness and talking about doing things for other people as a theme. We as a company support over 100 different charities in different capacities, whether it's through time or money or resources, from community organizations to national organizations to organizations that fight disease or mental illness or with children or autism, which is personal for me. And so it's very difficult for those organizations during this economic environment to be able to continue to function at the pace and the scale that they've been doing, because everybody's hurting. What is the first thing you do? You stop giving because you pull back on what you can do. And then also a lot of these organizations raise money through events that right. you can't do when you're socially distancing, whether that's a walk or a party or a fundraiser or other events. And it brings people together and then you get people to feel passionate about your cause. And you can't do that as well online or on a phone call. And so a lot of the charity organizations that we work with on an ongoing basis, certainly clearly a struggle for them in trying to navigate how to stay alive and continue to receive their funding going forward, which is a whole nother conversation probably for your 205th episode or something.
You might have to come back for the 205th.
Yeah. Let me know.
Just wanted to ask you, I know Jessica wanted to say something, but I wanted to ask you, Barry, with the nonprofits that you work with, what have you seen really work virtually?
Well, honestly, it's just not the same. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't want to sugarcoat it. You know, you talk to them, but there are a certain core group of donors and givers of people who have capacity to give. And so they do. But the getting people fired up around an event, it's just, even if you had the event, even if it was outside, even if you could socially distance, there's a certain amount of people who just won't come for fear of getting sick. And then it's just sort of bad PR and bad mantra that you're doing this, even though it's for a good cause. And so there are online auctions where they'll do silent auctions there. I get texts all the time saying, do you want to bid on this stuff? But it's just not the same, right? They are not going to get back to where they were until you're able to get people, surrounded around each other and get people fired up with it. So they are trying to get creative. They have cut costs themselves. They are looking to government to be able to provide additional funding. It's a challenge. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. And, you know, the other piece of it is you have students there at home trying to do, at home learning, and struggling with that whole aspect of how to stay engaged and how to stay on track and how to learn. But But then you have the whole social aspect of kids not being able to get together, not being able to do charity stuff, which they might be a requirement for high school or resume builder or other kinds of things, and doing stuff that is good that helps them interact with other people and get life lessons. And so it's across the board. I mean, it's just unfortunate. You could go all day with the different impacts of things, but as a business owner, just to bring it back full circle, and as an entrepreneur, you have to keep your employees motivated. You have to keep them unafraid from coming to work, right? You still have a business plan as a business owner that you need to try and implement. And it's very difficult when you're having staff meetings with people standing in the lobby 6 feet apart, trying to interact with people, and then trying to keep people from saying, hey, I don't want to come to work today. I don't feel comfortable because somebody sneezed in the kitchen, right? And so these are all things that you deal with as a business owner. And these are all things that you just deal with as a person each day. You got to get up in the morning and you've got to try and get yourself motivated, whoever you are, whatever you're doing. I tell my 16-year-old son, right, you're getting up in the morning and you're walking 4 feet to your, you know, computer. But that doesn't mean you don't have a plan for the day. That doesn't mean you're not going to, at the end of the day, tell me what you accomplished, tell me what you did, how you took a step forward towards whatever it is you're trying to do. And I think that applies whoever you are. Business, personal, what have you.
Jessica, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I think you, Barry, you brought up a lot of good points, and people don't realize, one of the organizations that I started contributing to this year, that was just started this year, is called Kids Lives Matter. And it addresses the whole, and Arne, you probably deal with this in your past life, we'll call it your retired life, right, with the social work, but just there's more and more children in need right now because their home life isn't great. Their school life was the most consistent, best thing that they had going. And so how can we, even just a small amount, I sat back and went, okay, what can I reasonably afford to contribute? Maybe I can't be the, $1,000 donor this month, but maybe I can give $10 a week. Maybe I can give $5. It's not a lot. It's not going to change the huge organization, but this is what I can do to contribute, because I firmly believe in what you give to the universe, you get back from the universe. And so if you are giving kindness, if you're giving passion and love, you will get that back. And so if I can give $5 every week, okay, maybe I don't go to, I know there's people suffering worse than I am. I don't go to the coffee shop and get a coffee, or maybe it's, hey, I don't stop at the gas station this morning and get the soda on Monday, because I'm going to take that $3 and I'm going to give it to somebody that actually needs it.
I hear you, Jessica. I agree about giving, but what I would like to see, and this is just me, well, ask Ardenae her thoughts momentarily, is more people giving of their time. Give money, yes, but I think so many more people need to understand the social impact that a lot of these children are going through. I had a friend of mine, we had this conversation, and it was maybe 10 years ago, 5 to 10 years ago. In Southern California, they started this push for K-12 education, which is basically homeschooling. And I was like, I think that is like, you shouldn't do that. And she was like, my child is so smart. He's so wonderful. He does all these things. And I'm like, yeah, but who is he socializing with? He doesn't, you learn from kids. You learn other things. You learn how to deal with the world and have conversations that you may not be able to have with your parents. So her son wound up being the valedictorian for his class. He goes to the graduation, gets to the podium, looks out over the crowd and breaks down in tears and runs off the stage. And I was like, I think I proved my point. You know what I mean? So I'm like wondering about the social impact of all these things that are happening in the world right now with our children. And again, Jessica mentioned Ardenae. You used to be a social worker. What are your thoughts?
Well, in my previous job experience, I was a program director over a school-based program where my staff worked directly with the school social workers and providing interventions to students. And so this whole pandemic has impacted our children in a number of ways. And I could speak directly about my nieces and nephews because they aren't having that engagement. And for those students who relied on the additional resources and supports from the school district, that has significantly been dwindled down. And so for those who needed the additional support with reading, those who needed the additional resource with speech, those who just needed to be able to socially mature and interact with their peers, they're not getting that at home. And my heart hurts because I do not know how this impact, this pandemic is going to impact our youth 10 years from now. There are some children who just started like kindergarten and their first experience is virtual. And so when they are able to return back to the school setting, will they have that experience, Sharifa, like your friend's son? And will they be afraid and fearful? So there's just so much that we don't know of how this pandemic is going to impact our youth socially and emotionally. And I'll even go a step further. As an adult, I've been struggling with the social isolation. Like, I've been joining different groups. I've been reaching out for support because I'm like, I love my family. I love my husband and my two young adult children, but I need to interact with other individuals. Like, I just need that. It's not a want. I need that for my social, you know, mental health. And so if I need that, I can only imagine what our young people are experiencing. And for those who typically would skip school, even those children now are even more disengaged, because at least when they were in school, like, they had someone constantly monitoring, but now they don't have that. And for those who have households who aren't the best supportive environments, that's another layer and another challenge that we are going to have to address, like, not later, but right now. And I know different organizations, different providers are trying to pivot and support our youth and adults remotely. I look forward to the day when we can re-engage in person.
Yes. Barry, you mentioned someone was going to say something.
No, I just wanted to share a quick story. I was at the coffee house one day and this young kid walked in, no more than 10 or 11. And he's looking around and I said, buddy, do you need something? He says, I'm supposed to meet my teacher here. It's like a meet a teacher thing. And I said, oh, okay. And he sat down and there's no teacher. There's no teacher there. I don't know what happened. Wires got crossed. I talked to that little boy for 45 minutes. He told me all of his impressions. He told me, everything. He's like, I cannot wait to get back to the classroom. I'm going in January. I cannot wait to go. And I'm like, good night. I just had a conversation with an 11-year-old about all of his impressions and what he likes and baseball and his whole life story. But they need it. They're craving it.
Yeah. Well, and look, a child who's five, who misses out on kindergarten, as terrible as that is for their development, they have many more years ahead to be able to try and recover from that event. Look at the child who doesn't get to go to their prom, or who doesn't get to go to dance with a girl or a boy and experience all of those things. Those are difficult. And so, you know, when you talk about Arne sitting at home and going crazy and wanting to, you know, do something else, there's only so much Netflix and so many Zoom calls that you can do. No offense, but I mean, that's what people do, which is why, at least here in California, now that, you know, you've got to get the restaurants open, not only to support all the people that work in the restaurant, all the vendors that support the restaurant, all the commerce that goes into it. It is an American pastime to go out to dinner. And if you can't do that as a family, if you can't do that to meet a friend, if you can't go have a beer with a buddy, you miss out on all those things. And so it's a challenge.
Yes, I definitely agree, especially being here in Southern California. Go ahead, Deborah.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, go ahead.
Maybe I'm overstating the obvious, but I know, and I'm sure that some of us, we're all probably different age groups, but at least some of us can remember that going outside and playing with our friends was what we did. We weren't on TV all day long. We weren't on computers and iPhones and what have you. So I think that as much as I know there's a lot dumped on parents today, they have a lot to handle because they're not only worried about their own livelihoods and their families, they're worried about their children and their mental status, you know. But I think that by creating some sort of a network where you can get children in the same neighborhood or even with a short drive away, get them outdoors playing. And even if it's like, you know, I'm from Montreal, I know how cold it can be. And, but to get them outside, even for half an hour playing in the snow, you do that and clear their heads just for half an hour. And they come back inside a much happier child. So I do believe that I believe an effort needs to be made if it's not already being made. I'm not in that, I'm not parenting a young child anymore. But I really do feel that, yes, for this lack of interaction and such an enormous amount of isolation, that making an effort, concerted effort with schoolmates, whatever, get 2-3 together, they'll be distance apart. You can throw a ball. You don't have to be on top of the kid. You can take a bat and, you know, tennis racket, wherever you are, you can find something to do, frisbee, and you do not have to be worried about, you know, not social distancing and being inside and being isolated. So I think that's something, just like we used to have recess, and I know a lot of schools don't do that anymore, but recess was, what was the point of recess? It was to clear your head, to get outside, to be active. And I think that, wasn't it Michelle Obama who said, like, let's get everybody moving and so on?
Yes, that was her let's get moving. Yes. I didn't even know they took out recess. Schools don't have recess anymore?
We have recess in our office. It's at 5 o'clock.
So. I have recess at 9 a.m. That's my ideal time. You're getting close. I'm done.
But the other thing I was going to bring up, Sharifa, just to kind of bring it full circle relative, not that I want to change the subject, but to bring it back to your original question to me, which was what's going to happen with the real estate market? And is it a good time to buy or is it a bad time to buy? I mean, I think that's also a relevant question that sort of applies to a lot of people, whether that's buying a house, whether that's if I'm going to go move to a new apartment or whether I'm going to invest in a piece of property. What does the future hold? And I wish I had a crystal ball and I, you know, be doing different things. But what I would tell you is that it really, again, depends on where you think the market is headed, certainly where you are in the country. The fact that interest rates are at an all-time low, and I expect that they're going to stay there, provides opportunities for people to borrow money easier and at a lower rate. And so it gives you the ability to then afford a larger payment, which is deceiving on the one hand and a bonus on the other hand. So the fact is that I can still buy a property at a higher price, whether that's a house or whether that's an income property. And so it keeps the prices, at least here in California, inflated. It's still supply and demand as well. You have to look at the basics of the real estate market. If you have an oversupply of houses, the prices are going to come down. If you don't have enough houses and you have more buyers, the prices will stay inflated. And so I think you have to take it market by market. But what we tell our clients on the commercial side all over the country is you have a dip at the moment. So if you have an opportunity now, while the markets are struggling, while the economy is struggling, while there's not a bunch of people in the market looking for additional real estate other than Amazon and a few select others, then you could take advantage of it. And I just think you will pay more later on. It doesn't mean the market's going to do the Trump V and spike up, but what it does mean is you have a window. And so if you can take advantage of that, you should.
Interesting perspective. This has been a very interesting show. I've learned a lot. And again, the 200th episode has been wonderful. Now I am coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Ardenae.
Well, I am encouraging all of you, if you have a dream, you have a passion, you have a goal to do something, there's no better time than right now, because what we've learned from this pandemic is tomorrow is not promised. All we have is this right now moment. And so I encourage you to go within and honor your passion and commit to action, whatever that may be, and do it on your own terms.
And you have a book?
I do. I have a book. So you can see it in the background, but also this is my first book. It was a 7-year project. And I'm so honored to be able to share it with people. It is really intended for women, and it's really about overcoming the adversities of being in relationship. But the most important relationship is the relationship that you have with yourself. So you can get the book on Amazon.com, or you can get it on my website, ardenaegarner.com. And I believe and I know that you will be encouraged by one of, if not all of the seven principles of the seven spiritual principles of relationships. Thank you, powerful. Sharifa.
You are so welcome. Jessica, what do you have for us?
So my mission in life is to get a 500 million people into nature on a consistent basis. It's why I started a company called Pull Through Sites, because when you think of a pull through site, it's easy and it's fun. So everything that I do with camping has to be easy and it has to be fun. And that's why I wrote the book, How Camping Saved My Life. It's not just my story. It's practical ways that you can actually get into nature and have a life as well, like run a business and then also get into nature. So I'm all about giving you practical ways to do it, because crazy busy women like us and Barry, you know, if it's not easy and it's not fun, I'm not going to do it. So everything I do is about just finding that connection, finding your purpose in nature. So you can check all of our stuff out at pullthroughsites.com. And then my book as well is on Amazon and on our website, that same website.
You took the motto from my life. If it's not easy and fun, I'm not doing it. I've been doing that for years. And people were like, Sharifa, you can't just not do it because it's fun. Being an adult is not fun. I'm like, okay, my life is fun. Deborah, what do you have for us?
Oh gosh, I wish I had 3 hours because I have so much to say sometimes. I'm going to read a very quick little haiku. And I think this is so important. I don't know if you can see this. It's called Your Happy Place. And we're talking about children and the pandemic and isolation and businesses impacted. And the simple haiku says, when asked directions where to find one's happy place, she replied, right here. And so I'll just share that. I think the whole idea is to be happy where you are, because you are where you're supposed to be. And so my takeaway for others is find contentment within yourself. Always keep positive. Believe that there's something better coming, because you know what? There is. There truly is. And I just wish everybody love, light, and kindness.
Love, light, and kindness. So for people who are hearing the show on the podcast and they couldn't see the book, what was her happy place right here?
It was right here.
It's just a big heart. Yes.
And by the way, if anyone wants to reach out to me, info@TuluCreativeContent, I do Zoom sessions with classrooms, with children, and I read from my book. So that is my way of giving back.
Thank you for giving back, Deborah. Barry, what do you have for us?
Well, those are tough acts to follow. I don't know what I can add to it. But what I would tell you again, just to regroup on what we've been talking about all morning, which is if you wake up each day and try and accomplish something positive during the day, and you look back at the end of the day and you can say to yourself, these are the forward steps that I've made during the day, then you're making progress. And whether that's personally or whether that's on the business side of things, then I think you're headed in the right direction. For your viewers out there who would potentially be clients or customers of ours or would have an interest, certainly they can get more information on us at saywitz.com. And anyone who owns a business who has a lease, who is looking for new additional space or wants to renegotiate their lease, that is what our expertise is. We do it all over the country, so we are happy to help. I appreciate the opportunity to come on with the ladies this morning, and congratulations on your 200th episode. I wish you many more.
Thank you. I appreciate you. I appreciate you all. And I want to thank you for being guests on today's episode, the 200th episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the live show does not mean you're not important. I appreciate you. I appreciate you for hanging in there for 200 episodes with me. I greatly appreciate your support. But as always, please don't just watch the show. Please don't just share the show. Support our guests. Our guests are here this morning to help you, to provide you with information, share their journey, share their stories. So support them. Their website link is in the Facebook post. But As always, don't just visit the website. Follow them on social media. Reach out to them. Send them a message. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Bye-bye.